A discussion and question and answer session with our previous speakers, as well as Neil DeVos, who can maybe come up and introduce himself a little bit. And I wonder if it would be best to have the speakers all come up here and answer the questions in the mics. Yeah, we can do it that way. And make sure to repeat the question so that it's all in the recording.
I'm Neil DeVos, and I'm editor of Hort Technology and the Journal.
So if you have questions about the review process and you don't like how your paper got rejected, he's the person to talk to.
Questions?
The question was that the posters are presented in many different formats, and did we have any suggestions for the most appropriate format or improvement, most effective?
I like simple, as little information as you can get away with. There is this thing that I personally refer to as the gray blob symbol. I see a poster from 10 yards away, and it is a mass of gray, and I walk on because my brain can't handle that. Bullet points, I like, and literally as little text as possible. I personally don't like abstracts on a poster, because if you have so much information on your poster that you need an abstract, you have too much information, too much text to begin with. Your poster is pretty much an abstract. And then make your conclusions. Well, make your objectives stand out. Make your conclusions stand out. I really like that. I can figure out, oh, this is what they were trying to figure out. This is what I found. And now I can decide, do I want to look at everything else?
Personal preference.
Well, certainly we're trying to encourage authors who... I'm sorry? Repeat the question. The question was, as we move towards electronic publication, are space limitations such a major concern? Clearly, with the access to electronic publication, we are offering authors the opportunity to publish appendices and supplemental tables and figures that don't appear in the paper journal. However, having said that, I think that to a certain extent it's being used to excess. It is becoming kind of a data dump. I've been there too, and I understand that once you've toiled relentlessly on a study, you have an inclination to want the world to know how much work you've done. But it's appropriate in some cases, somewhat inappropriate in others. Having said that, it's not costing the society any money to provide that electronically. And as long as you're aware that page charges still do apply to those entities that are published as part of the final manuscript, I think we're all in agreement then.
I think with supplementary information, it still needs to be relevant to what you are actually trying to do. Don't just put all your data that you collected in there, in my mind. Yeah.
Present it.
I'm not even sure. Should we be having the questioners come up and give the questions? But did everybody hear the question? Do we need to repeat that? Mark, Jim? I don't think I've ever encountered that, so.
I think if you find something really interesting but unexpected, I don't like hiding anything. Quite frankly, my experience is when you try to hide something, a reviewer is going to catch it and nail you for it. So I think generally it is much better to just be really open about it. And I think you can simply say, we saw this, it was really unexpected, it looks very interesting, we have no clue what actually happened. It's fine. But it may be better to, if you really want to follow up on it, you may wait till you actually have done that next step in your research. One thing that I didn't mention earlier, though, is this happened to me in one case. So you start out with a set of objectives, and now you start collecting your data, and you start making graphs. What is probably my best paper that I have written in my career, the paper is about a completely different topic than what I started out about, because I found some relationships that I thought were really fascinating, and I was lucky enough to have all the data to tell that different story. And there is nothing about the original plan that I had in that paper. And that's perfectly okay. You don't have to stick to the objective that you had to begin with. You just need to tell the most interesting story you can.
Okay. So you're asking the differences between separate results in discussion and results in discussion as one entity. Mark, you seem to have more of an opinion on that than I.
I don't have an opinion on it. I have a preference. I cannot write them separately. My brain just doesn't work that way. I feel like I'm repeating a lot if I write a discussion, but it is purely personal preference. I have not seen a single journal where you are absolutely required to do it one way or the other. So, in my mind, just do what you think is right for you. And it depends on your writing style or maybe how your brain works compared to mine.
Yeah, and in regards to that, I switch back and forth. And sometimes the content of the paper just lends itself to one format or the other. So I've never had a comment from any journal saying, well, you did it this way, but we want you to do it that way. So I think that's how does it feel as you're writing it? Do you need to explain everything as you present it, or do you just want to state the facts and then come back and digest it all and stir it all together and discuss it?
And I think for what it's worth, it's not uncommon to see members of a review team who are members of the other side who like it separated or like it put together. But by and large, if you can address that even briefly in a rebuttal, I don't think that we've ever held up a paper for publication for failure to do so.
This question is for you. What are some of the biggest reasons why a paper might get held up and not get accepted? Or maybe like red flags or things you may be advised to avoid?
What are some of the red flags that hold up publication? It's difficult to respond to that because every manuscript has to be judged on a case-by-case basis. And throughout the years, there have been people, editors in particular, and sometimes reviewers who come forth with notions that it should be ASHS policy that we require this. But we are so diverse, and the kinds of studies that we publish are so variable that I don't think we can ever do that. I certainly think that the review process, by and large, is not holding up publication. Sometimes the revision process is difficult. I do think that authors have a great deal of difficulty obtaining rigorous reviews of their work prior to submission, And I think that tends to slow down the review and revision process. But I can't think of anything in particular that, the one thing I would say is that, and I think Mark expressed this extremely well, is that, first of all, Mark used the term reject, which is something we never, ever use. That's the R word. And we never say reject, we say decline. And to us, it has a very different meaning, because if a manuscript is declined with the option of resubmission, really it's a very small difference between that and a manuscript that is accepted for publication with major revision. The decline decision with the encouragement for resubmission is really saying the changes that you're being asked to make are sufficient that we feel that the revised manuscript needs a new round of reviews. In my case, for I can't speak for Ron and Hort Science, but in the case of Hort Technology and the journal, we endeavor to, whenever possible, that second review team is composed of the same reviewers. We feel like if you've jumped through those hoops once, you shouldn't be presented with a group of reviewers who are asking a whole set of different questions. If you've satisfied the original review team, you've done your job.
But so there are a few ways that you can get your paper not rejected, apparently, sorry, but declined in a hurry. At least it's typically really fast. And one thing is that a fair number of papers get declined within a few days because you just submitted it to the wrong journal. So I'm a consulting editor for the journal, and Neil fairly regularly sends me a paper and says, is this appropriate for the journal? And most of the time when he asks me that question, the answer is no. And as soon as I say no, the paper is declined, and we recommend typically that they submit it to Hort Science in many cases. But there is also papers that are just so poorly written that when Neil gets the paper and then he asks me or another consulting editor to suggest reviewers, and I typically scan the paper quickly before I do that, partly because I want to look at the citations to figure out who good reviewers might be. But there are some papers that I scan through that I immediately say that this is not ready for review. That needs to go back to the authors and let them resubmit it later if they want to make the changes. There was one paper a few months ago. It didn't have a single data point in the whole paper. The whole paper was about statistical analyses of the data, but no data. So that went back very fast.
Of all the people that review papers, I'm sure they all have a different set of criteria of what they think is important. And for me, I can forgive a lot of formatting things. I make a lot of recommendations for fixing the format and making a better title for your table or figure. But really, the kiss of death is when I see papers where they make statements of fact in the results and discussion that do not agree with the tables or figures. So you show data that the means are different, but you say, well, nothing was really that different. Or you say this was better than that one, or this one was bigger than that one, when the data clearly show, in your table at least, that they are in fact not different, or they have the same letter, et cetera. So making everything agree, that's very important, and that's something I can't fix for. I can, you know, change formatting or suggest different spelling or different way to write numbers, but you can't fix that. The reader or the author has to go back to the author.
Are students considered peers, and can they serve as reviewers? Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I often apologize to students when I impose the title of doctor on them without knowing. But we do that as a courtesy. That's the default system on the website. But often students are our very best reviewers. And you may not be aware of this, but we are hungry for good reviewers all the time. The way the process, how do we get, your question is how do we get to be reviewers? How do we become part of that process? Well, by and large, our reviewers are drawn from names suggested by the author and also names suggested by the consulting editor. And then failing that, We look at the literature cited. We look at the our reviewer database to see who has reviewed previously in that subject area. And so if you haven't been asked to review, I'm surprised. It seems to me we annoy everybody with requests to review. And it's just a matter of entering into the system. Commonly, I will get emails from students who would like to serve as reviewers, and all I ask is that they tell me what their interest area is, and I send that information out to the consulting editors, and very commonly they enter into that process a lot sooner than they expected, and perhaps not to their entire agreement, but anyway.
I think another way, an easy way to get involved in the review process is to talk to your advisor and just let them know that you would be interested. And when your advisor is asked to review a paper, what I often do with my graduate students as they are further along is I give it to them, I review it myself, and then we compare our comments, because I'm also trying to help them become better reviewers along the way. And if your advisor says, oh, I never review papers, then just let us know and we'll write down their names, right, Neil?
And we have done that on more than one occasion. We have had a student and an advisor co-review a manuscript, and that's a wonderful way to go. And those reviews tend to be great learning experiences and also extremely valuable to the journal.
The question is, how do you choose the correct journal for the work that you're doing? In my mind, think about who you want to be your readership. Who are you trying to reach? So I do some papers that I publish in physiology journals and other papers that go to ASHS journals, and it depends on the specific topic. And these days, there is a journal for every topic. You just want to pick a reputable journal, obviously. But think about your readership. Who are you trying to reach? Because as I mentioned before, it's about not just about publishing your paper. It is about reaching an audience. So that's what you need to think about really carefully, I think. What is your audience?
The only comment I would make is that I think that the journal of choice is very commonly pointed out by your literature cited. Where are the studies that are essential to your work being published? That's where your colleagues are looking. Yes, ma'am. Is repeated experiments required for publication in Hort Science or the other journals? Well, by and large, most horticultural experiments require repetition in time or space. Having said that, Hort Technology makes an effort for research with an outreach focus, that is, research whose results are ready for direct application by our clients. We have a section we call preliminary and regional reports. And there we look for experiments that aren't going to be continued because of economic considerations or something of that matter, but have been properly replicated. And then as long as the results are couched in such a way that it's clear that the authors understand that these are preliminary results and may require repetition in the future but are not in process of being repeated, that's perfectly acceptable. I wish Ron was here. By the way, Ron Robbins, the editor-in-chief of Hort Science, did ask me to send his regards and his regrets. He had other conflicts that he couldn't manage.
So, you know, like, you said, you're going to ask your growth with the number of viewers. How often do you use it?
The question was, when you submit a paper and you suggest reviewers, how often are those reviewers used and what weight is put on those? I'm afraid this is another, it's on a case-by-case basis. Sometimes we have authors suggest reviewers who have not had a track record of reviewing, so it's hard to know what kind of review you'll get back. An author suggests reviewers that we have knowledge of, that have a track record of publishing or reviewing, commonly they're invited right away. If it weighs heavily towards people that we don't know, I may wait for the consulting editor to make some suggestions. It has to be on a case-by-case basis. The worst thing that can happen is to go through that 21-day review period with a full review team, and you end up, and this does happen, and you end up using reviewers that are suggested by the author, and it appears that they're buddies. And you get three sentences that say, essentially, this is the greatest thing I've ever read. No changes are needed. And then you don't really have something that's useful. And you talked about, we were asked a question about what holds up the publication process. That right there holds up the publication process. Because when I see something like that, I am obligated to essentially start over. So instead of getting a review back to you, a first decision in, say, 21 to 25 days, then now you're almost doubling it. So, and it does happen. Yes, sir. So your question is, when you submit a manuscript and you fulfill the obligation to give us the names of two colleagues who have reviewed it prior to submission, do we assess the competence of those pre-reviewers? Actually, we don't. And as a matter of fact, the publications task force has been discussing this issue. And I think it's likely that in the future, that requirement will be a recommendation and no longer a requirement, because it's becoming abundantly clear to us that, number one, your colleagues are very frequently so limited in their time that getting a really robust, rigorous review is not possible, added to the fact that you're requesting reviews from people that you see day to day and want to be on speaking terms with. So it becomes difficult, and quite frankly, we are resulting in a system where we're forcing people to give misinformation, because someone will submit a manuscript, use as two of the pre-reviewers co-authors on the manuscript, our managing editor informs them that that's inappropriate, and then 45 minutes later, they come up with two other names. We have the feeling that rigorous reviews were not done in advance. The reason for the requirement was really to try and get manuscripts in as good shape as possible prior to expending the time of a review team that receives no remuneration, just doing this out of goodwill and duty. No, if you give us two names, we're going to take the two names, as long as they're not co-authors on the paper. And we've run into that, actually. We've run into deceased members that have been listed and that sort of thing. So.
Any recommendations for a preferred graphing software to use? I had a committee member
I don't think there's a preferred list. I like to use SigmaPlot, but that's, you know, and to make tables, I use Microsoft Excel. But you could do, I mean, I think a lot of them work well.
Anyone else?
I think we finally wore them.